Center on Saturday evening, February 27th, live in Los Angeles and by live stream. For more information, call 310-348-1250. That's 310-348-1250. Or go to agapelive.com. KPFK is a proud media sponsor of this event.
Hi, this is Joni Mitchell, and you are listening to KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles and 98.7 FM Santa Barbara.
Help me, I think I'm falling in love again.
All right, welcome to the show. It's the Michael Slate Show. Yes, I'm back again. Anyway, we have a great show for you today. And let me tell you right off, as you know, we're in the midst of the fund drive, and we have a very special offer for people today. When you want to show your support for this, for the station, we actually have over, we're offering you something that's really, really unique. It's never been done before. We've never done it before, okay? And it's a collection of all the, we're in the midst of Black History Month. And it's a collection of all the various interviews that we've done. Not all of them, most of them, a large number of them, not all of them. But it's a broad, broad collection of the interviews I've done with various people over, maybe over the last 7, 8, 9 years. And maybe it goes all the way back to when I first began, which would be so long ago, I actually had no gray hair. There you go. Okay, but we this includes interviews on Black people in medical care and what's going on with that, slavery and the Civil War, Dr. James Loewen, Dan Rasmussen, who wrote about the largest American, the largest slave uprising in America, the untold story of America's largest slave revolt. We've included some work with Bob Avakian, some work by Bob Avakian, an excerpt from his talk, Communism and Jeffersonian Democracy. We've included Craig Stephen Wilder's book, Ebony and Ivy, all kinds of things going on, and Jim Crow and Neo-Slavery, Doug Blackman, filmmaker Sam Powell and Doug Blackman discussing the film of Slavery by Another Name, which is Doug Blackman's book, which we also interviewed him about. We go on to Mass Incarceration, Michelle Alexander, Jonathan Simon, author of Mass Incarceration on Trial, Alice Goffman, who wrote a remarkable book, published a remarkable book last year that came under fierce attack for the... basically connected up with what she had actually been revealing about the state of life for Black people in American cities, in Philadelphia in particular. And we also have a lot on the Black Panther Party, including interviews with Joshua Bloom, Jeffrey Haas, Ricky Vincent, and Stanley Nelson. Okay, so there's like a whole pile of stuff that we have offering for you, and it's for $75. So if you call now, 818-985-5735, 818-985-KPFK, or go to kpfk.org, you can show your support for this show. And that's all I'm going to say about this right now, because opening the show up, well, actually, let me tell you, at the back end of the show, we're going to be talking with Cameron Watson, who's the director, and Elizabeth Francis and Brian Tishnell from a play I saw just recently called Dreamcatcher down at the Fountain Theater, a remarkable play and really, really on the money, on time in terms of what's going on in the world. It's a play about the contention between two people, one who's a solar engineer who wants to, you know, basically build a giant solar plant in the Mojave Desert and, help to contribute to the ending of the, to saving the planet. And the other is an indigenous woman who actually discovers that that part of the Mojave Desert may just be a burial ground for her people, and she wants to preserve that. And they're going up against that, each other in that. Plus, they're in a relationship that that they're also going up against each other in. And it's a really remarkable play. It really plays out a lot of things and raises a lot of questions. And it's one that, you know, just, it's fascinating. So stay tuned for that. But opening the show up, I'm really pleased to be bringing to you Sansara Taylor. And many of you know Sansara from the work that she's done. You know, she's been on the show numerous times talking about StopPatriarchy.org, abortion. She's been talking about all kinds of things. And right now, she's part of a campus tour that's going on all across the country that's called What It Will Take to Get Free, An Invitation to Meet the Revolution. And she, along with Carl Dix, who you also are familiar with if you've been listening to this show, Carl Dix is from the Revolutionary Communist Party and is also a co-founder of Stop Mass Incarceration. And basically, they're going out and they're in L.A., in the L.A. area, this over the last week and this week. They're going to be here talking about about Meet the Revolution. It's not enough to just recognize what's horrible in the world, but to really wrestle with how the hell are you going to change it. So I'm going to stop talking and just welcome Sansara to the show. Sansara, welcome.
Hi, Michael. It's great to be with you again.
Yeah, you too. Let's jump into this. You're on tour, and it's a very special tour. It's different than, I think, any tour that's going across this country in quite some time. And you're coming up. You'll be at UCLA this Tuesday, February 16th at 7 p.m. at Campbell Hall in the Learning Pavilion. But you've been to California State University in San Bernardino. You've been out at Riverside. You've been all over the place so far. And this is just the first leg of it. Tell people what the tour is about and why you're doing it.
Well, we're on tour, myself and Carl Dix, and we're targeting campuses, actually. We're going to the students. Now, everybody's invited, but we're especially reaching out to young people and students because there never has been and there never will be a revolution, which is what humanity needs around the world and what humanity needs from us in this country to actually lift the beast of U.S. imperialism off their backs and to end the crimes of the system. There never will be a revolution without students playing a very, very radical role in it. Without a radical student movement and without a broad section or a growing section of those students taking up the science of revolution, the science of communism, and in particular the breakthroughs in the frameworks, the framework that's been developed, the new synthesis of communism by Bob Avakian and the leadership he's providing. So we're going to the students and saying, yeah, you're at a stage in your life, you are trying to figure out your place in this world, you're being opened up to new ideas, your horizons are expanding. And every other voice in society is telling you, voice and institution, to find your place within this world as it is. Whether it be to just turn your back on the people of the planet and look out for yourself and try to get ahead, or whether it even be something a little bit more broad-minded where you try to help a few and give back, but more or less leave the machinery of capitalism, imperialism humming in the background, crushing lives and destroying spirits. And we're going to people to say, no, actually, there's a way to get free for the entire 7 billion on this planet. There's a way to put an end to police murder and terror, the violence and degradation of women, the destruction of the planet, the roundups and deportations of immigrants, and the wars for empire, the drones, the tortures, the occupations, all of this. And we need to fight these things today. We're recruiting people to stand up to fight them. But most fundamentally, to be getting into the science and the leadership of the science of communism and the leadership of Bob Avakian and get organized into the revolution to actually fight these in a way that we could go all the way and win. And so we're out to recruit. We have a mission that this generation should not be consigned to be the selfie, me, you know, generation. And a lot of them don't want to be. But if they don't know the way out, then as heroic and as self-sacrificing as some of them may be, they won't be able to be part of actually breaking through and freeing humanity. And so this is what we're taking to people, and we're recruiting. And we have an aim to bring forward revolution clubs on the campuses around this country, to bring forward and strengthen and fuel a broader radical student movement standing up, and to learn an incredible amount and make a real leap in advancing and preparing for an actual revolution in this country.
Mm-hmm. Now, why don't we talk? There's a couple things I want to talk about. One is I want to talk about, first off, let's talk about, you said that at the center of this, at the heart of this is Bob Avakian and what he's brought forward, his leadership and what he's brought forward, what he's, you know, the way, the pathway he's charted in terms of a, you know, a way out of this, in terms of a revolution and in terms of building a whole new world. Why are you bringing, what's so important about bringing BA to this generation of students now?
Well, I think history has shown that where there is oppression, there will be resistance. The masses of oppressed people will rise up against their conditions of oppressors and those who enforce those conditions. But without scientific theory and without leadership based on that theory, that's scientific, that accurately understands the nature of the problem we're up against, the source of the problem, and what's required to actually resolve it in the real world, not a wish, but in the real world. Without that understanding, even the most heroic struggles of the masses of people will remain confined and contained within the system that gives rise to this oppression in the first place. And the horrors to which the masses are subjected will go on and on. And I think, you know, you could think of countless examples around the world. Right now we're on the 5th year anniversary of the Arab Spring and the uprising there, which was heroic and courageous, but where people didn't have that scientific theory and leadership. And so they thought the army and the people were one hand. They thought millions of people thought this, and millions were wrong. And they drove out Mubarak, but the military was still there, and it's torturing and repressing people today, and it's a nightmare in Egypt. And it's one of many examples. So people do need to understand the nature of the problem they're up against, and they need leadership that actually understands how to chart the way out. And this is Bob Avakian, has actually made, not only never given up on making revolution in this country, since he came forward in the 1960s, but he's really gone to work on what are the obstacles, what are the challenges in the history of making communist revolution in the world. And what he's done is he's taken the scientific kernel, the foundation that was discovered by Marx, where a breakthrough in understanding why human societies are the way they are, how they could be changed, and the basis to really get to a world of from each according to their ability to each according to their need, which is the communist vision. Marx made a breakthrough. Lenin and Mao led heroic and liberating revolutions on that foundation that accomplished a great deal before they were both defeated. But even within that, the fundamentally scientific and fundamentally liberatory character of those revolutions, there were secondary elements that have been part of the development of communism up till now, certain religious-like notions that communism is inevitable, or that people who are oppressed somehow automatically have a special purchase on the truth. And these and other kind of unscientific dimensions, which ran counter to the fundamentally scientific character of Marxism up till now, B.A. Bob Avakian has shed those. He's developed a new synthesis that actually puts communism for the first time on a fully scientific foundation. And then on that foundation, he's applied that science to a lot of the thorniest questions, the most vexing, challenging questions of making revolution. How could you actually win a revolution in a country as powerful as this? What's the strategy to get in position to win that? What's the strategy when the all-out struggle for power is the order of the day? What's the political framework and the economic framework and the morality and the vision of a new society day one after the revolution and stretching into the new, you know, all the way forward towards digging up all forms of exploitation and oppression? He's applied this science to a lot of spheres that if we don't take this up, humanity needs to confront these problems, and he's solved a great many of them. But most fundamentally, he's developed a framework to enable people to keep on learning and keep on encountering reality and keep on going to work on solving the problems that maybe, you know, are not yet anticipated. And so it really is a revolution in human thought. And most people don't know this, but it opens up the potential to really emancipate humanity and go all the way. And this is something that people need. And we're out to fight for people to engage it, to learn it, to take it up. But if you want to be free of slavery in every form, you need to engage deeply with and become a follower of BA, and then become a leader of masses of people on that foundation and be actively part of making this revolution. So I would encourage people to go to revcom.us, and there's a lot there on the works of Bob Avakian. There's 6 resolutions that were recently published by the Central Committee of the Revolutionary Communist Party that go into, in greater depth, the content and significance of the breakthroughs that BA has made and this new synthesis, because, you know, I can only indicate it in a short exchange with you on air, but it's a revolution in human thought, and it changes everything in terms of the prospect of human emancipation. So this is what we're taking to people. This is what we're encouraging people to get into.
Mm-hmm. And I know we only have about 1 minute, but one thing I really think that's important is that in addition to everything that you're saying, and you put this, the whole thrust of the tour is what's it going to take to get free, an invitation to meet the revolution, join the revolution. And you're going into a situation on the campuses where it's not sort of just an empty barrel. There's a lot of, you know, thinking, a lot of, you know, ideas about, you know, what can you do in the world today? People confronting those existential questions of, you know, what am I going to do with my life? And you're going in, you know, pretty sharply with a sharp answer, not just sort of a, hey, check us out, we're in this dusty room over here. But you're actually stirring up a lot of things and speaking to a lot of the most important questions that people have in relation to their lives in the world, and calling on them to take part in this thing, which I think is absolutely imperative and long needed. So.
Yeah. I would, in my last 20 seconds, I would really encourage people. This is directed towards students and young people in particular, but everybody is invited out. It's at in the Learning Pavilion at Campbell Hall at UCLA next Tuesday, February 16th, 7 p.m. You can find the details at revcom.us. So everybody's invited out, but especially if you know students, if you know young people, if you know professors on the campus, if you have friends in these schools, especially encourage them to get the word out. Everybody at UCLA and all the young people in this area need to know about this, need to come out, because, look, there really is nothing more important that somebody could do with their lives. There's nothing more important that you could do with your life or the young people that you know could do with their lives than doing whatever they can to contribute to the fight to emancipate all of humanity. And we're going to bring a scathing indictment of the crimes of this system. It's going to be rousing. It's going to be passionate. It's going to be challenging. Some of it will take people out of their comfort zone. A lot of it will be familiar and welcomed and delight people. Some of it will be unfamiliar and maybe cause people to scratch their heads, but introduce them to new ideas that they need to be engaging with. And we're going to provide people a concrete way to get organized now to be part of learning more systematically, because if you want to contribute to freeing humanity, you have to master the science, to learn more and to go out with this and join with others to impact the world now, even as you're learning. And it's a really, humanity needs this from us. There's never been a greater urgency for fundamental change. There's never been a greater material basis, and there's never been more advanced scientific leadership. And what's missing is, what's needed is you and the people that you know. So that's my invitation and challenge to people. And we'll do this together on a much higher level. It'll be exciting. Tuesday night, I hope to see people out there.
All right. I'll be there for sure. Okay. There you go.
Excellent.
And I'll bring a whole army of people with me. There you go. All right. Sansara, thank you very much. All right.
Thanks,
Michael. See you Tuesday. All right. You're listening to The Michael Slate Show, and we've just been talking with Sansara Taylor, who is on a nationwide tour with Carl Dix. And it's inviting you to meet the revolution, to hook up with the revolution. It'll be at UCLA, as she said, this Tuesday night in Campbell Hall at the Learning Center. So basically, make it out there. Be there or be square. And right now we are going to be, this is how we're rolling today. Right now we're going to be bringing in the people from the play Dreamcatcher. And we're going to roll as we go along because we are trying to save time. All right. So right now, you guys can come on in. Usually, shh, no, do it quiet. We'll have music up. But we're not going to do that today. So each of you grab a seat and there's two mics over here and one there, and just make yourself comfortable. And I will right now tell people that if you like what you've been hearing and what you hear all the time on this show, you need to throw down with it. You need to stand up and sit, stand up and say, look, or get up and walk over to your phone. If you don't have a cell phone, then you get up and walk over to your phone. Or you can go to your computer and type it in and say, yeah, see, I'm even talking about going to a computer and typing in. I'm from 1972. Okay. It's sort of like, I look at my computer and I talk to it and don't understand why it won't work. I don't really do that. I can't get my computer turned on yet. Anyway, and I'm not really that dumb. I don't know why I'm saying this. But I am calling on you to actually support us now. We need the support of each and every one of you. And we have we have a really great segment coming up right now to talk with the director and the cast of Dreamcatcher, a fantastic play down at the Fountain Theater. But before we get into that, I got to urge you again, give us a call, 818-985-5735. 818-985-KPFK. We need you now to support the station, to support the network, to support this station in particular, and to support this show. All right? We really, really, it's not desperation, but face it, folks. This is not a world that's kind to people or to shows or institutions that are sort of going up in the face of everything that's happening in the world today, and especially things that are actually telling the truth in an unfiltered way. And that's what this network is all about. That's what this show is all about. And we need you to support it, because there ain't nobody else that's going to support it, all right? We don't go to corporations. We don't go to big government funders. We don't do any of that. We rely on people who can afford to donate thousands at one time, to people who can only afford to donate $5 at one time. But you people have come through every time. On this show, I'm always really, really, really pleased and surprised to a certain extent by the amount of support that this show gets. And we need you to step up again. 818-985-5735, 818-985-KPFK. And we have a premium that we put together. My assistant producer pulled it together over all day yesterday and all night last night, stayed awake, and so therefore is sleeping at the wheel right now, but he stayed awake and Got over 7 hours of interviews I've done over the years tying in with black history and all the various aspects of that, how people were treated, the legacy of slavery, what's going on in the cities today, mass incarceration, all kinds of things. And we're going to be building on this because in the week that follows, we're going to be bringing in, I have a series of unparalleled and unheard, actually, anywhere, interviews with Oscar Brown Jr., with the late, great Oscar Brown Jr., who was, I was very close to, and when he died, we were in the middle of doing a series of interviews for his autobiography, and we have all of them we're going to put up as part of a premium, also a film of a two-hour interview I did with him down at the World Stage maybe 10 or 11 years ago, and Oscar was one of a kind. You didn't meet many people like that, somebody who had dedicated his life to fighting against oppression through his art and really was an amazing artist. You guys know anything, about Oscar Brown Jr.?
No.
Aha. Okay.
Go on.
See, that's the problem. But you can get this, and you can get this next week, and you'll learn about one of the really great, great, great radical artists in the history of this country. All right? So joining us now, I'm really pleased, although I'm going to tell you again, 818-955-5735, 818-955-KPFK. Give us a call. Go to your computer, kpfk.org. Show your support for the sisters and brothers because we need you now more than ever, as you know. Okay? Now, I'm really pleased to introduce the cast and the director of this play that I've been talking about, that I really want to talk about now, Dreamcatcher. And it's a play written by Stephen Sachs, and it's down at the Fountain Theater. And the Fountain's always providing us with really remarkable stuff. And so I want to welcome to the show Cameron Watson, who's the director of the show, and Elizabeth Francis.
Thanks for having me.
Who's one half of the cast. And now I got to get your name right, Brian. Brian Tishnell or Ticknell?
Tishnell.
Tishnell.
Right out of the gate. Yeah. Okay. Should have trusted yourself.
Who's the other half of the cast? Oh, it's a nice time I have to trust myself.
You're
sure.
Yes.
I've been down that place.
We're here.
Listen, that's what got you in trouble in this play, okay?
Yeah, right.
So why don't we start with Cameron? Why don't we start with you telling people what the play's about?
This is a world premiere play by Stephen Sachs. It's a two-hander that takes place in the middle of the Mojave Desert, and this couple that we see as soon as the lights come up have been involved in an affair, a pretty hot affair for a few months.
Affair.
Roy is a solar engineer, assistant solar engineer, working on a solar energy plant in the desert, and he has struck this relationship with a Native American from the reservation, played by Liz Opal. The character's name is Opal, and we find out immediately as the play starts that she has unearthed some artifacts, bones and teeth on the site where the solar plant is being built. And basically she looks at Roy and says, "Stop, you can't build this." And then we go on a ride for about an hour and 20 minutes. That's pretty remarkable.
Yeah, actually, she doesn't say, "Stop, you can't build this." What the hell are you thinking?
Yeah. No, what I say, I can't say on the radio.
But well said on stage. Okay. Let's go with this. Liz, tell us about your character. I mean, what drew you to your character? Because you obviously actually really embody that character. It sort of becomes part of you in it.
What drew me to Opal, I hadn't heard about the script before, and someone said, "Hey, this guy Steven's going to contact you because he's got this script." Oh, great.
Did this go in like whispers on the corner?
Yes. Right. Hey, check it out. You should check this out. And actually, I was able to see a first draft of the script when Stephen had a reading at his house. He just wanted to hear it out loud. And from the moment that I read that script, I thought, wow, this is being a Native American actress, you get a lot of characters that are not, full human beings. There's a lot of stereotypes. There are a lot of people written in a historical context, I'd say from a lens of misunderstanding. And when I read her on the page, I thought, wow, she lives in modern day. She has a very strong point of view. And also where she comes from, and that sort of fighting through hopelessness on the reservation, I really, really loved her kind of journey through this play and her journey to self-discovery.
Mm-hmm. Brian, what about you?
What drew me to the play? Cameron sent me an email, and so I was drawn to. But I got to audition, and when I read it, I just thought it was one of the most well-written scripts I'd read, especially in terms of people with passions and their flaws, And I feel like Stephen wrote characters that, while their intentions are good and they're noble, they also have blind spots in their own personalities and their own, and they're blinded by their own idea of right or wrong. And I thought it was just very human, while still, you know, it's a very socially conscious play. It's about, you know, marginalized cultures. It's about climate change. I mean, these are issues that we're living with. But the script just dealt with those issues in a way that was extremely human and flawed. And that's the only reason to do theater, is to show mm-hmm. that, you know, show that part of humanity.
You know, it's interesting too, because both of you, I mean, and it's just, there's so many contradictions going on in the play. There's so many things that are going on. There's the relationship. There's the good part of the relationship. There's the bad part of the relationship as it unfolds. And then there's the bigger question that's there, that's all the time, that really the play, in a certain sense, plays that's the heart of it. Mm-hmm. But then there's all these other organs around it that come out. And I won't go any further with that, because this is the kind of mood I'm in today. Soon we'll be talking about hospitals and all this stuff. But we will get into this in a minute, because it's actually it's very heavy to have to actually play both those from all those different perspectives at the same time. Mm-hmm. You know, and Liz, I can see in your character the wrestling with each of those different facets of your own character, which is kind of very heavy and drew me in, but also really made me love the character too. So.
Oh, definitely. And then, wait, it's not a comedy? No. But yeah, you know what? It's the wrestling of I think the relationship, what I love about it too, is even though it deals with all this, these issues, is at the heart of it are just these two people who come from completely different worlds and are trying to wrestle with each other. And also the beauty of it is they're so different, but they've learned from each other, and I think that's part of the attraction. The attraction of, you are from another world than me, and you can teach me something about something I've never been exposed to. And that's attractive, especially because, you know, for Opal, I think Roy is so passionate about what he does, you know, Brian's okay to look at, so.
Yeah.
You were so sweet.
Listen, let's talk, man. No, you can't fall for that. Come on, man, get up.
yeah, I agree, and I think that's, there's a lot of fighting in the play. There's a lot of arguing. There's a lot of, you know, debate. There's it's really written to be, you know, from the moment that we enter the stage, it's very intense, and it's very almost violent in a way. It's verbally violent. And I think that is part of, I mean, that's what's interesting about these characters, and that I feel like that is part of the attraction. I mean, sometimes you would rather fight with someone than not be with that person. There's something about the fact that I'm challenged in a way, or Roy's challenged in a way that he can't wrap his brain around, and because it's also what she's challenging him on is a debate of spirituality versus science, or however you want to define that. But really, what it is that it's just she's challenging him in a way that he can't wrap his brain around, and it's that causes tension and sexual attraction for sure in life.
Cameron, let me ask you, because you had to direct this, and you did a remarkable job in terms of visualizing. And I've seen things where you talked about, like, how you looked at the play one way when you first read it, and then you went out into the Mojave Desert, and and you guys did the play out there for, I don't know, a bunch of desert rats, who I understood really like it. They have a road show going on.
Yeah, they're taking it on the road.
That's the crow. The crow follows us to all of our gigs.
And by the way, just in terms of getting along, I found it's your version of things, even though it has its flaws, is much better than the temptation to just get large Rottweilers and put them in. Love me, love my dog. So let's talk about this, Cameron, doing the show and sort of, you had a lot to direct in terms of, and you, even in terms of the creation of the set, in terms of, it really put you there beyond your constant sweat, which I have to say was really.
That's one of my talents. Yeah, I can sweat on command.
That's why we cast. Special skills on his resume.
He's a great sweater.
His sweat and your snarl. Okay, just going now. So let's talk about that.
Well, when I read the play, obviously I was extremely attracted to it, but I didn't see it visually the first time, and then once we started opening it up, and I felt like it had to be in the round, I felt like we had to be in a circle. We had to all experience this together, almost tribal. We had to sit in this circle together and go through this experience communally. And Stephen and Simon and Deborah, all the great people at the Fountain, were so open to this idea of let's tear out all of these seats that are in a normal kind of proscenium setup at the Fountain and have been for many years to great success. But I said, what if we take them all out and we put it in the round so we can all sit and watch this experience together? And everyone said, you know what, I think that's the right thing to do. So that was the initial jumping off point of this circular experience. And then because the play takes place where it does, in the middle of the desert, that was so important to me and to us to tell the story from that place. They're not sitting in a bedroom. There's nothing they can lean on. There's literally nothing they can sit on. There's no props. They can't pick up a glass of water. So we had the idea to go out to the desert one day, and we had been rehearsing for a couple of weeks. They were still on book, and we found a place not too terribly far away at the very southern tip of the Mojave, and we actually did the play in the middle of the desert. And the playwright, Stephen, and I and the stage manager went. It was just the five of us. And I told them, just start the play. We picked a spot that felt kind of right as the center for the play. And I said, just go. If you need to run across the desert, we'll run with you. I just want I want this play to experience itself in the desert. And it was absolutely magical and haunting. And I think I thought I was going to stop and say, you know, well, we've been working in the theater like this. Why don't we cross over here and do all of these technical things? And I couldn't. It just, the play took over. And I think Liz said after that experience that day that the earth took over, the environment, the air and the wind and the sand and the dirt and all the elements that the play is about took over. It was really powerful. I've really honestly never had that experience in any kind of rehearsal for anything that I've ever done.
Yeah.
I mean, you guys.
No, yeah. I mean, you can't oversell what we experienced. It was crazy. And just because when you go out to those places anyway, it's kind of bizarre and it's you know, there's a feeling of like you're almost on another planet. So it was very it was a transcendent moment for me, not just for the play, but just as a human.
And you brought that back into the theater, which is actually kind of very cool. Which is
And that was our big when we finished. It was something to take in. We had to kind of just exist up there before we got in the car to drive home. And we didn't really want to talk about the play. We just wanted to let the experience live in us. And the one thing we did say driving home is now the job is to take that into this small, intimate theater. And I think we've achieved that. And I think that experience is why it works as well as it does in the small theater.
I want to give people a chance to hear what was brought into the theater. So, Brian, Liz? Give us describe what you're going to do and then just run with it. Although, no fighting, okay?
No fighting.
Good luck.
No fighting.
No cussing. Okay. So I guess this is a part of. These are in the middle of the fight, and we're at odds at this moment, and I'm trying to explain to her why we need to build this plant to save the world, and
And I'm trying to rationalize why this saving this land and moving the solar plant is so important because my ancestors are here. I mean, present. And so I guess this is kind of the midst of that.
Yeah, right in the middle, thick of it. Right.
Yeah.
SunTech wants to save the planet.
SunTech wants to make a buck.
Oh, we're not ExxonMobil here. We're the good guys, remember?
Then move the fuck. Move the solar plant.
Move the bones.
This is where spirits live.
You didn't even know that stuff was here.
Bones are not stuff.
And bones are not people.
Fine. Let's build a power plant at Arlington National Cemetery.
Oh, please.
A Walmart at Gettysburg.
You can't make something holy just because you want it to
be. How can you say that?
I'm sorry. I'm an engineer. I think linearly in straight lines, not elliptically in circles.
You know what? Just because you're smart, don't make you right.
The facts are the facts. And the truth is the truth. And you have to have the courage and the moral compass to face what is true about your reality, no matter how much it hurts or how scary it is. We know climate change is a fact. And we know global warming is happening the same way that we know that the Earth isn't flat and wasn't made in 6 days.
Duh. That's stupid.
Right?
Everybody knows that.
Like, I'm just saying.
It was 4.
What?
4 days, how the world was created.
4 days? What?
At first, there was just earth and sky. No sun, all was dark. Before placing the sun in the sky, the creator drove this big stick into the Colorado River and out jumped all the fish and water birds and stuff. Then he placed the sun in the sky. Not from fire. You know how he made it? Made the sun?
Oh, please tell me.
He had all the human beings shout. Shout! Shout with joy! 4 days they made this mighty noise. And at last, the sun appeared in the sky from our voice. And when the creator was done putting all this stuff in order, he stood at the edge of the Colorado River, stretched up his arms, and they became wings, changing into an eagle. And he flew up, up, up into the sky.
Well, that's nice. It really is.
But?
But you don't believe that.
I don't?
No, you know it's not true.
Who says?
It's a folk tale. We tell myths to ourselves. It's a fantasy. It didn't happen that way.
How do you think the world was created?
Well, I don't think. I know. I know how it happened.
Tell me.
Well, about 14 billion years ago, the unimaginable vastness of the entire universe...
Yeah?
...was just an infinitesimally tiny single point of dense energy a million times smaller than the tiniest point on a pin. But no form, you know, no structure. And then 10 billion degrees, boom, kapow, it's a huge explosion. And time and space burst out into cosmic waves, out in all directions, into the endless void, forever, never-ending, fiery, unformed particles. And then temperatures cooled, subatomic matter formed, and then these enormous phosphorescent intergalactic clouds, or these immense primordial elements, coalesced through the invisible power of gravity to form galaxies and stars and planets and yeah.
You don't really believe that, do you?
That's how it happened.
Okay, there you go. Now you get a sense of the conflict going on there, and also I had to be really careful when you were swinging your hands around. I said, "Oh no, he's going to hit me." But it's actually the intensity of that. I think comes across, and the fact that, look, you know, it's interesting too, because this morning the paper has what that actually the Mojave Desert is now being recognized to a certain extent,
yeah,
you know, as a place of a national whatever, you know, protectorate. And then at the same time, they've also talked about that the universe is singing, that Einstein was proven correct. That
yeah.
The two black holes that combined, and now they're just hearing the sound from them.
Yeah.
And it changes everything once again, you know. And so you're looking at this, and because I think, you know, what I was thinking about in relation to this play is it's not, I know it's, you know, look, there's the thing, the conflict between you two on many different levels in your personal relationship. And, you know, both the feelings you have for each other, but also the kind of deception that's going on to a certain extent in terms of what each one of you wants from that relationship, you know. And but then there's also this bigger thing, I think, that because I don't think it's a question between, I know everybody says science and religion, but it's actually, there's more a question of the respect that you have, the contradiction that comes up, the respect you have, that's demanded in terms of the indigenous people and other peoples, but the indigenous peoples and the grave sites of their ancestor.
Absolutely.
And, yeah. And then there's also the question that you're facing. I think one of the great lines in the play is the one that comes across with, like, look, I'm just trying to save the planet. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm trying to save humanity, which really is. Even though you have a lot of, you know, desire for, I'm being recognized as one of the big boys. The big boys are recognized, letting me play with them and all this other stuff, you know.
Right.
But it's actually deep down you have a heart that wants to, you know, and this is what I think a lot of good scientists are about.
Yeah.
But the question that was raised for me is why the hell we have to live in a world where the choices has to be one or the other,
right?
You know, and to me and there's a great line in this I lost the great line. anyway, it was... I won't try to remember because it'll just take up more time. Anyway, but I think that there's a lot in this that really reflects, you know, the fact that, look, you know, this is the line you said. You looked at him and you said, why don't we just, I think we're going to go build a reservation. Or maybe we can build maybe you were talking about the solar power plant. We can build it at Gettysburg.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Or we can build it at Arlington Cemetery.
Which is completely, it's just, that's unbelievable to anybody.
Right.
That's unimaginable,
right,
you know, for us as a society. But
essentially to indigenous people, it's the same,
exactly.
It's the same thing.
Well, except that one indigenous people has actually been wiped off the face of the earth almost.
Exactly.
Not by you, but your character, but by the system. And what, you know, when you think about that, because the big thing that actually stops people from settling that in a reasonable way actually has much more to do with, well, it costs like $800 million to stop now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so to me, there was like a lot more tied up in this, which I thought both you're directing it had to concentrate someone. How do you not bury any one of these, meanwhile bringing out the conflict that actually is at a higher level too for you guys?
Which, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and in their own ways, they're both trying. They're both trying to respect the land. Mm-hmm. That is what they both want to do, and just in very different ways, and from very, you know.
And right. It's one of the things that it is the thing that attracted me to it when I first read it, because, like you were just saying, they have good hearts. There's nobody's doing. It's hard to put your finger on a bad guy because everybody's heart is in the right place. They're just trying to do the right thing with all the complications that come with it. And like you said, the blind spots that come with that too. But you and then the audience does that. They go back and forth and go, you know what? She's right. They should stop. Well, you know what? He's doing something that has to be done. Mm-hmm. We've got to save our planet. Well, we can't stop the plant, but wait.
Yep.
And right. You get in your car and you drive home. And I had friends come to one of the shows and she called me the next day and she said her whole family came to the show and they went out to dinner. And she said, we sat at dinner for 4 hours talking about those issues in the play. And I mean, if that's right. Mm-hmm. there's the purpose of coming.
Yeah.
And I think too, it's that battle between what is perceived as, especially I think with indigenous peoples, as preservation, because he's saying, I'm fighting for the future. Mm-hmm. And she's saying, I'm fighting for us not to die out. Yeah. I mean, language, culture, there is just a history of indigenous peoples in this country and in Canada. I mean, just throughout the world that, I think hasn't been recognized that has been a genocide essentially, and people living in the after effects years and years later, where how do you not die out, mm-hmm. you
yep.
know?
Yeah, absolutely.
And his point is valid too, because he's saying, well,
but that's manifest destiny,
right.
isn't it?
That means yeah.
I have a very moral justification for why we're going to take more of your land away.
Yes. Right.
Is essentially kind of
exactly.
what's happening. You know?
Don't talk yourself into a crusade, okay?
Right.
All right, listen, we're going to have to wrap this up because I got to desperately raise some money. So
go for
Cameron
it.
Cameron Watson, thank you very much for
thank
joining us today.
Thank you very much.
And Elizabeth Francis, really pleased to have you here. And Brian
thank
Tishnell,
you.
Thank you, man.
Thank
you
so
all
much.
For the play. And it's just, everybody should get down to see it. It's at the Fountain Theater, which I always forget the address, but the Fountain Theater is 5060 Fountain. There you go.
Fountain in Normandy.
Good memory.
Fountain in Normandy, right. 5060 Fountain in Normandy. And it's Saturdays at 8 p.m., Sundays at 3 p.m., Sundays at 7 p.m., and Mondays at 8 p.m. Again, Saturday at 8 p.m., Sunday at 3 p.m., and 7 p.m. and Mondays at 8 p.m. Folks, don't miss this. And here's the address written right down there. Lucy does this very well all the time for me, but it's 5060 Fountain Avenue. Make your way down there, and you're going to have something to talk about for a long time.
And Monday night, I'll throw in Monday night at the Fountain is always pay what you can.
All right. Okay. How about a bag of pretzels? Huh?
Yeah, we'll take it.
We'll take
and look at this. We have already raised $2,255 already. This is absolutely great.
Keep going,
all right?
People. Keep going.
So this is really good. We could go on talking forever. I just think, you know, anyway, I better get back to fundraising. So thank you very
much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Take care. And see you again, and I'll send my dogs down to see it because they need some help, okay? All right, take care now. All right, folks, you've just heard what we've been doing here and what we're going on with. This is what's required of the human race today, of humanity in general. This is what's required, the kind of dealing with these kinds of questions and problems. This is the theme of today's show. We have solutions. We have a world that cries out for solutions, and we have solutions. We have the way the questions are posed, and people like the folks at the Fountain Theater are wrestling with these kinds of questions and bringing them out to big stages, and we're bringing that to you. But we need you to continue to support us in the biggest way possible. We need you to support us with everything you have. We need you to actually step up right now. Say that you love KPFK. You love this show. You love what this network brings you, what this show brings you, what this station brings you, and you're not going to let it disappear. You're not going to turn your back on it. You're not going to say that somehow we've just decided that we can't take this anymore, because you don't get things like this anywhere else in the world. 818-985-5735, 818-985-KPFK. We need you now to step up and show your support. And right now, we're going to bring you some of the things. You know, when people always ask me, well, what is it that your show does that is actually different than other shows? And I think what I want to do is I want to play a cut from one of the things, if I could get my assistant producer to actually pay attention to me. Okay. I want to play a cut from, let me see. I think maybe the third, number three, the Voices of Former Slaves with Ed Baptiste. And this is the author of The Half Has Never Been Told, a story about slavery, in a history of slavery in America. And I want you to hear this, and then we might, if we have a chance, we'll play a little bit more. But I want you to hear this. Okay, so let's play the third track, all right? Thanks, Gary. As we opened up this interview, you talked about the idea that some of the source material you used were the stories that were recorded from ex-slaves. And I was really surprised that you were able to include and actually frame your book in these stories, and reading how you talked about how the people that the WPA yeah. sent people out in to canvass the South and to find ex-slaves to get to tell them to tell their stories in the 1930s. Can we talk about what drove you in that direction? What pushed you in that direction? Because it was a very powerful way to begin, where these stories actually unfolded from voices that really people don't really generally conceive of even existing at a time when you could gather information from them.
Yeah, it's a reminder, first of all, that on the one hand, slavery is a long time ago, ended officially 150 years ago. But then on the other hand, in historical time, that's not that long. Essentially, it's a lifetime ago, there were thousands, maybe tens of thousands of survivors of slavery still living, and they could be interviewed, and they were in many cases happy to talk about what they'd experienced. Now, in some situations, they couldn't talk openly. They had to sort of disguise some of the things that they were saying, because some of the WPA interviewers were members of locally powerful white families, and this was the Jim Crow South, when it wasn't necessarily safe to say exactly what you thought about white people. But other interviewers were African American. I opened the book with the story of Lorenzo Ivey, who's interviewed in Danville, Virginia. He's actually interviewed by an African American master's student from Hampton University. And his interview always struck me as incredibly powerful, because he frames the story of slavery and in some ways of American history by talking about the coffles, the chains of chained gangs of enslaved people being marched from Virginia on down to Alabama and New Orleans and so on for sale, as the key memory that he recalled from his own growing up. He tells this story. He says, you know, this is what I remember about slavery most clearly: separations of families by sale and forced migration, the movement of people in chains, how all of that fed into the cotton economy. And then he says, truly, son, to his interviewer, he says, truly, son, the half has never been told. And I read that and I said, I have to frame the book around this interview. It absolutely has to happen this way, because we owe so much to those voices. We have to start, we have to open with those voices and go backwards in time from there.
All right, and that's the voice of Edward Baptiste, the author of The Half Has Never Been Told. And that book was just a really searing and really compelling and just amazing book. Some things that I've never read anywhere else, telling the history of slavery in this country, and not pulling any punches, really laying out the history and the way it plays over into the world today. All right, and I want to let you know, we've already raised $2,330. All right, and thanks to Desmond from Gardenia and Kevin from Playa del Rey, and that's Desmond Welsh from Gardenia and Kevin DeFesh from Playa del Rey. I want to thank both of them. I want to thank everybody who's contributed today, but I also want to call on you to keep it up. 818-985-5735, 818-985-KPFK. Sisters and brothers, we need you to stand up today. You know the quality of the programming you get on this show. You think about, you know, when I was told this, when my assistant producer brought this in, Henry Carson, when he brought this idea to me yesterday, and he said, look, we've got all these interviews that we've done over the course of the years with various people who've written about the history of black people in this country, and who've done films about it, who've done, you know, basically, this is the kind of stuff that we need to get out here. We need to get these interviews up, because the interviews are singular in their quality and in actually who they are. We've talked with people like John Hoberman, the author of Black and Blue, which is a scathing exposure of racism in medicine and its impact on black people. Dr. Jeffrey Silber, the director of the Center for Outcomes Research at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, talking about the higher mortality rate facing black women with breast cancer. Lundy Brown, who wrote a marvelous book, an incredible book, Breathing Race into the Machine. about the genesis of the spirometer and how it was used as a critical part of the oppression of black people in this country. Dr. James Loewen, who talked about the neo-Confederate, he did the Confederate and Neo-Confederate Reader, The Great Truth About the Lost Cause, and using the words and documents of the Confederates and Neo-Confederates themselves, he shows that Confederate leaders were open and out front about why they started the Civil War to protect slavery, not to protect the Union, to protect slavery and a society based on white supremacy. Yet you never hear about these things, all right? 818-985-5735. 818-985-KPFK, kpfk.org. We need you to step up now. Show your support, all right? And you heard the folks from the Fountain Theater in here, you know, talking about the play that they've done. And that's the kind of stuff we bring to you all the time, things that make a difference in the world. And you could hear in the passion that the people talked about that play with, the value, the importance of that play. And I really do recommend that people get down there and see that play. It's something that will have you talking and thinking for a long time. But, you know, we've got all of these things that we're offering to people. But the biggest thing we're offering you right now, the biggest thing we're offering you is the opportunity to step up and fulfill the necessity that we're faced with, all right? Take care of that necessity. Join the Sustainer Circle, for instance. Give $10 a month, $20 a month, $50 every month. And you can, and if you gave $100 a month, you would be able to get, you know, your name up on the wall in the front. Even though most people, look, I know most people that do this, that donate to this show, don't do it to have their name heard or polished all over the place, but they do it because they care about this show, they care about this network, they care about this station. And we are, yes, it's no secret, we're in a struggle. We're in a struggle to really get ourselves back onto a place where we have some stability, where we're able to actually do even more of what we do now. Okay, we're able to actually sink a lot more effort into the kinds of things we do now, be able to go out and cover things on a basis where we can be out in the neighborhoods, we can be out doing this, we can also, you know, develop the different methods as the methods of communication change and develop. We want to be able to go with that. But that requires you. It can't be done without you. 818-985-5735, 818-985-KPFK. Join the Sustainer Circle. Give $10, $20, $50 every month. Whatever you can afford, give that. Sign up for that. You know, throw in if you can only afford $5 right now, or if you can afford $1,000. Throw it in right now, sisters and brothers, because we need you to step up. We need you to step up in a way that, you know, people just basically that you've done time and time again, and we need you to do it again now. 818-985-5735, 818-985-KPFK. We're down to the last seven and a half minutes, okay? That's about what we got. And in that time period, I just want to remind you again that what you have here, you have a show that is dedicated to changing the world and bringing up a whole different future. You know that this is the only place that you hear regularly the voice of Bob Avakian, the chairman of the Revolutionary Communist Party, and actually the most revolutionary cat on the face of the earth, okay, in terms of what he's brought forward, in terms of the path that he's actually, look, he's mapped out a road to get us out, not only get us out of this mess, but how can we build a whole other world? And he's wrestled with, how do you do that? How do you actually build a world that can be absent oppression? You know, how do you build a world? How do you get to a world where people can actually interact with one another as human beings and continue to develop the planet and whatever form human society takes, where it can be something that people, you know, are in together, and there isn't rulers and ruled. There aren't, you know, oppressors and oppressed, but there's people working together to keep changing the planet and developing it and developing the conditions of life for humanity. That can be done. And for every other creature on this planet, all right, let's not forget about that, all right? Every other creature on this planet, for a whole world, all right? This is what we're about doing. And you only get this. You get this on this station. You get this especially on this show. And you get it, you know, on the network in general. But nowhere else do you get that. And that's why so many people around the country, you know, write in and they actually want to run shows from this station. They want to run shows from this network because they don't get that anywhere else, and they know they don't get that anywhere else. And it requires a certain amount of commitment and love from the people who do this show, who do this show. I know for a fact it does. It requires a certain amount of commitment, love, and care for humanity and for the quality that we're putting out to you. 818-985-5735, 818-985-KPFK. Sisters and brothers, in the last 4 or 5 minutes, we need you to step up. I want to get this as much as we can, you know, really make that mark and basically leave the show today understanding that what we did actually made a difference. It made a difference in you know, how we're going to push a KPFK ahead, how we're going to push this station ahead, how the show is going to continue to develop, how the audience is going to continue to develop. What can we do to bring ourselves together more? What can we do to interact with each other more? Let's get those ideas flowing, but on the basis, and they can only flow on the basis of support. There are no phone lines are lit up right now, which means you have a chance to do this, all right? You have a chance right now to call, light up those phone lines, and tell us, you know, that show us your support. Anything you can give, from $5, $10 to $1,000 or more, 818-985-5735, 818-985-KPFK. As I was saying, you know, before, we plan to bring a very special premium next week, so maybe some of you are holding on to that, but it's a series of interviews I did with Oscar Brown Jr., the legendary jazz singer and writer and activist, and he's it's a series that he and I were working on that's going to help him write his autobiography, and there's stuff you've never heard before, and it was an interview I did down at the World Stage. Oh, maybe, I don't know, was it 10 years ago, something like that? Maybe a little bit longer than 10 years ago, but it has never been heard since that night. And it was a really, you know, amazing night. That'll be a DVD. But that's one part of what we've been doing around this Black History theme that we've been trying to hit on, all right? But we're also offering you now, in addition to what I was talking about, Edward Baptist, the interviews with all these people, you know, subjects of Jim Crow and neo-slavery, you know, Douglas Blackman and the original interview with him about his book Slavery by Another Name, and then later the interview with him and Sam Pollard about the film they made, Slavery by Another Name, which brought some of the slave owners, the descendants of the slave owners, into the picture, all right? And that was very, very interesting. We have Bob Avakian, the chairman of the Revolutionary Communist Party, talking about, you know, the lynchings and what they meant, and talking about Emmett Till and Jim Crow and how black people lived under a death sentence in this society. Michelle Alexander, who we interviewed as soon as her book, The New Jim Crow, came out, talking about mass incarceration in this country and what it has to do with the whole way that black people are being, you know, lied to and downpressed. We talked with Jonathan Simon of Mass Incarceration on Trial about the future of prisons in America, a remarkable court decision and the future of prisons in America. We have Alice Goffman, a fearless young writer who lived among the people in Philadelphia and wrote a story about living when I read the book, it actually amounted to a modern day Warsaw ghetto. 818-985-5735, 818-985-KPFK. We also include interviews about the BPP, the Black Panther Party, from authors Joshua Bloom, who wrote a history of the Black Panther Party, the Black Against Empire, the History and Politics of the BPP, Jeffrey Haas, who wrote the author of The Assassination of Fred Hampton, How the FBI and the Chicago Police Murdered a Black Panther, Ricky Vincent, the author of Party Music, The Inside Story of the Black Panthers Band, and How Black Power Transformed Soul Music. We have all kinds of interviews that are offered to you, but mainly, sisters and brothers, in this last couple of minutes, what we offer you right now is we offer you the chance to support this station and to support this show. Give us a call now as we go out. Light those phones up for one last moment this time this week. 818-985-5735, 818-985-KPFK. Sisters and brothers, give us a call now. Let us know that you're there, and we are going to be going out. But in this couple of minutes, just keep calling, all right? We'll talk to you again next week. Take care.
If you were asleep and have not been tuned into the documentary and political analysis of Safe Harbor, here's what you've missed.
Every voice needs to be discussed. The voice they want to hear and the voice they don't want to hear.
One of the mistakes which some political analysts make is to think that their enemies should be our enemies.
An electoral choice of 10 different fascists is like choosing which way one wishes to die.
We came, we saw, we died.
Bernie Sanders, and people are saying, no, he's the best candidate for black people. And I'm so sick of white people telling black people what's in their best interest.
I don't see race. I'm colorblind. You still see me as white?
You definitely white as hell to me.
We have to fight with our allies, but it can't be just because a person is black or green or gay or orange or whatever it may be. They have to be issue-oriented.
Both Mayor Moscone and Supervisor Harvey Milk have been shot and killed.
Police have arrived at City Hall. They've got Riot Squad here on.
In case you've tuned out, tune in to Safe Harbor, midnight to 3 a.m. here, only on your KPFK 90.7 FM. All power for the people.
KPFK.
Would you like to help make the world a better place, but your friends just want to watch TV all the time? Do you have a bunch of great ideas that all go to waste? Well, then come down and get involved with your local commercial-free radio station, KPFK. You can help us produce programs about issues you feel strongly about, or help out at one of our fund drives. Our goal is to get 30,000 people donating $20 per month, the price of a mere pizza. So please call during our fund drive from February 3rd to February 23rd at 818-985-5735. Powerful people.
Welcome to KPFK, established in 1959 on the Pacifica Radio Network, a broadcast service of, by, and for the people. 90.7.